A4.
Number 3, B.
Now we come to point 3F. Mortal mind is the counterfeit of the divine mind. In investigating mortal consciousness, we have now to ask ourselves now, what is the reality of this mortal consciousness of mortal mind? And there, Mrs. Eddy gives a unique answer by showing that though we experience mortal mind as something very real, that as a matter of fact, it is not real. But if we look deeper into the question of mortal mind, we find out that it is not a counterfact of the divine mind, but a counterfeit of the divine mind. And she calls it, therefore, a supposititious opposite of the divine mind, and defines its nature as untrue, unreal, erroneous. Therefore, the power that mortal mind seems to have is an illusive power, is an unreal power, is an untrue power. It is true that from the standpoint of mortal mind, sickness seems very real. And we can't just say that sickness is an illusion, because it's actually more than an illusion. It is what Mrs. Eddy calls a solid conviction. And I point that out because we are only too apt to say to a patient when he is suffering, well, this is just illusion. Sickness is just an illusion. Well, it is fundamentally an illusion, but he experiences it as a very tangible reality. And we must really explain to the patient more deeply what it is, because for him it doesn't seem to be an illusion. For him it is very real and a solid conviction. So within ourselves we must find the clarity that mortal mind is actually a counterfeit of the divine mind, which means that it is divine mind misrepresented, misstated, misunderstood. And so we come, so to say, to the same conclusion in the mental realm as what we have seen yesterday in the material realm, where physicists find out that matter is actually spirit, when spirit is not understood as spirit. And so, in the same way in the mental realm, we come to the insight, really, that mortal mind is actually the divine mind, when the divine mind is misunderstood, misstated, misconceived. It isn't a counterfact, it isn't an identity per se. I mean, mortal mind is not an entity per se. It is actually derived from divine mind. Not so that the divine mind creates mortal mind, but it is derived from the divine mind by mistranslating the divine mind, by misunderstanding the divine mind. Therefore, we can see, as long as we don't understand the divine mind, we certainly entertain a false consciousness. And we are living in a realm of belief with all the et cetera that we have been seeing of these false beliefs. And you can easily see where, therefore, our solution lies. It lies not there where we try to counteract, so to say, all the various beliefs, where we try to improve on the various beliefs, but where we see all these beliefs, be it individual beliefs, collective beliefs, universal beliefs, be it conscious beliefs, be it subconscious beliefs, be it unconscious beliefs, whatever these beliefs are, they are always the divine mind misunderstood. And so we don't have to cure ourselves, so to say, of these beliefs. What we have to do is to drop them and start afresh from the divine mind and translate the divine mind rightly instead of wrongly, state the divine mind rightly instead of wrongly, and translate, therefore, the divine mind to the point of idea. instead of mistranslating it to the point of belief. And if we have seen that, then we have come to the core of the teaching of Christian Science. Therefore, we can quickly touch the next point, 3G, where we see that mortal mind is nothing. That's Mrs. Eddy's conclusion. Though she speaks a lot about mortal mind, though she explains how mortal mind works, though she explains all the classifications of mortal mind, and though she explains all the interrelations and interactions of mortal mind and body, she has to do that in order to make it clear to the reader that he is living in that realm of illusion. But then she comes to the main point and says, now what is this mortal mind? And if she says it's a counterfeit of the divine mind, then naturally she can also name its nature and say mortal mind is actually nothing. It is no thing, no place, no person. And this is naturally the great point which she brings out, that evil is no person, no place, no thing. But it is interesting that she would make that statement only on page 71 for the first time in her textbook, that for 70 pages she would go on and on and on and leave the reader in the dark as to the reality or unreality of evil. She leaves the evil absolutely in the dark, but only when she comes to the chapter on spiritualism, right at the beginning, she lets the cat out of the bag and says, look here, mortal mind or evil is no person, no place, no thing, no channel, no power, no. Gives us then the explanation of its nothingness. And then after that, finally she can introduce in the following chapters that mind is all in all. She first had to empty the reader's thought of his belief in mortal mind before she could fill it with the fact that all is mind. And that's exactly what I have tried to do for the first few hours of this talk, just to point out first the realm of that mortal consciousness, showing how it operates, how it believes it operates, in order to come then to the insight that really mortal mind is nothing. But it is only nothing to us also, if we have an understanding of the divine mind. As long as we don't have an understanding of the divine mind, we attribute to that nothingness a lot of power and a lot of possibilities and a lot of evil. But we do it. And therefore here we come to that great point of changeover, so to say, to the point where we turn by 180 degrees in our attitude and begin to look into the immensity of the divine mind. And in the measure as we understand the immensity of the divine mind, we will never think anymore again about mortal mind, about mortal beliefs, and all the tricks that mortal belief wants to perform. We can easily see the following. If we have the belief that there is mortal mind, then we have seen that we must also believe that there is matter, because matter is the subjective state of mortal mind. That's what we have seen yesterday, that the whole universe, from the atoms to the stars, are nothing else but the construction of the human mind. So the moment we believe in mortal mind, we also have to believe in the material universe, and so we believe in matter. The moment we believe in matter, we believe in body, because the moment we mix mortal mind and body, we mix mortal mind and matter, we have that nice mixture called the mortal body with all the hell there is about it. So the moment we put them together and put mind into matter, we have body and the diseases of the body. If that is our basis, our principle, then naturally we will experience death, sickness, and all the hell there is. Because why? We couldn't have death if we would not believe that there is mind in matter. Because we say somebody has died the moment that matter does no more move. As long as the moment it does no more breathe, The moment that matter has no more mortal mind working it, we say it's dead. And as long as it still breathes, no matter if that body is conscious or unconscious, as long as it's breathing, we say he lives. So you can see the question of death is not the primary question. It's a secondary question. The primary question is, do we believe in mortal mind? If we believe in mortal mind, we believe in matter. If we believe in that, we believe in body. And then we believe that the body has life, and that the body can be sick, and that the body can go through all the hell there is. So instead of attacking in our practice or in our life experience the question of death and sickness and hell and all that thing, we should really attack our misconception of mind, of the divine mind, as mortal mind, and therefore attack our misconception of spirit, namely as matter, and our misconception of soul as mind in body. And if we put that straight and have mind and spirit and soul as our principle, then we have the principle for demonstrating life, truth, and love. We have the principle for demonstrating eternality, health, and holiness. If we do not see that, then we always try to demonstrate an effect instead of demonstrating a cause. We have to demonstrate the cause of the problems. And the cause of the problems are very simple the moment you can reduce them to its nomenon of evil, namely mortal mind, matter, body. Actually, the biggest nomina is only mortal mind. If we can tackle that and have no mortal mind, we have no matter, and we have no body. And if we have no body, we have no death. And if we have no body, we have no sickness. And if we have no body, we don't go through hell all our life. Can you see how science, rightly seen, reduces the complexity of material existence to simplicity? But we have to look straight into the deep problems of existence. Yes? Did I make myself clear about that? So that really from this point on we could turn our investigation into analyzing reality per se. We have seen that if mortal mind is nothing, because it is the counterfeit of the divine mind, we come to the great realization, therefore, that in reality there is only the divine mind, and that the divine mind is all in all. And this is the great, great central point of ordinary Christian Science teaching, not of our teaching, not of my teaching, but of the general Christian Science teaching. I can say, I think, by looking back over the teaching of the last 70 years, say since the time of Kimball up to now, that actually the general Christian Science thought was mainly engaged in realizing the fact that all is mind, and that there is no matter. And you can see that this was right for the beginning, that it is a starting point which must be seen in its proper light. It must be seen, what is reality? Is it matter, or is it mind, divine mind? Again, we come back to the first question that has gone through the last 2,000 years, namely, that constant question, materialism versus idealism. Is matter the reality of being, or is mind the reality of being? And Christian Science has picked up, really, that trend of thought again, has exalted it, because it has not stated, so to say, materialism versus, can I say, mindism, with a small n, but has elevated it to the point of materialism versus divine mind. And so the interest of the students were to get a clear sense for themselves that actually all is mind, capital M, that all is divine mind, immortal mind, and that there is no matter. And it is usually on this point that all the literature circles around, not only in the Christian Science movement, but also with the dissenters. I think I could take practically any of the dissenters and could prove that their main interest was always to show that all is mind and not matter, with all the false conclusions and with all the right conclusions, and the wrong conclusions there mostly in the majority. Mostly in that way that because they could see that all is mind, or anyway because they were based on that statement that all is mind, they felt, all right, when all is mind, then matter is mind. That's easy. That's the easiest way out, and the most idiotic way out. Just denying a definition per se and putting them together. So we have to be aware of that situation, that this is only a starting point to get our basis straight. Is our basis of reality matter, or is it mind? But that's only a starting point and not the end of it. What do I mean by that? I think this is perhaps the most difficult little part to convey at this moment, what I mean by it. But little by little, we will see it, what I mean. You know, when one reads all these books and all the literature in Christian Science, and one more or less can reduce and reduce everything to the fundamental proposition that all is mind, and that mind is all in all, and that matter is nothing, is not real. And if one feels out what do they mean by mind is all, or that only mind is real, you can't help feeling that they have a sense of mind in a substantialistic sense. They have found instead of the substance of matter, they have exchanged the substance matter, so to say, for the substantialistic sense of mind. In a way, as if mind, capital M, if mind were one big whole thing, one big whole amorphous concept. All is mind. All. What's all? They don't explain what all is. And you have a sense that they have made a big step forward, but only a first step, namely from all is matter to all is infinite mind, but giving a sense that all is infinite mind. What do they think about that all is infinite mind? Don't they have a kind of amorphic, undefined, unstructured sense of a whole, and it gets very pretty near to mysticism. Now, this is naturally the way the world and Christian Science has been thinking up to recently, up to the last 20 years or so. Also, in other sciences, they were always more or less interested in the investigation of their subject by finding out the substantialistic sense of their field and of their tools and of their elements, and just to investigate those elements. Whereas modern approach in any science is absolutely different. They have seen, and that's why I tried quickly to show you yesterday, that if you take the substantialistic sense, say even of matter, and you analyze matter, you can split it up, and when you have split it up, you split it up again, and when you have split it up again, you split it up again, and you split it up again, and you split it up again. You still have a substantialistic sense of it. No matter how tiny these first building stones become, they are still substantialistic. I can't explain it. You see, naturally in physics they say you have quantums. It's a quantitative, a substantialistic sense of the thing. And that's how we are brought up through thousands and thousands of years. Because of our limited senses, we think of reality always in quantitative ways, in substantialistic ways. And so when Christian Science came along and exchanged the matter substance into divine mind substance, or even into spirit substance, all right, you lost your limits and the material sense of substance. But what was that substance afterwards? It was still some kind of amorphic whole. So it is a step forward, but a very little step compared with what modern science is investigating. Namely, and now I come back to what we have been seeing in physics and in psychology and in biology and in every science you entertain now, you study now. In every science you study today, whatever that science is, it doesn't matter which range of science is, they don't investigate anymore their subject in a substantialistic way. They investigate it in a structural way, and no more in a substantialistic way. They have seen that the question of what is matter is a false question, that they should have asked, what is the relationship? What is the structure? What is the structure of truth and love? Not what is the substance of truth and love. So here we are approaching a completely new model of thought, a completely new model of how to approach the whole concept of reality. Instead of trying to find out and to write voluminous books that matter is nothing and that all there is divine mind, we should investigate the inner structure of that divine mind, the relationships within that divine mind, the laws which exist within that divine mind. I just go quickly back to what I have quoted yesterday in regard to atoms, where they said atoms are dynamic, undulating structures. There's nothing material about it. But it's no more a substantialistic sense of matter. It is actually now a structural sense that is under investigation. Or they said that atoms are dynamic interrelationships, basically relational. Can you see? The whole trend today, the modern trend of science is to go away from the substantialistic investigation to the structural investigation of a subject. All right.